Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, veteran-owned coffee company, premium coffee to people who love America. We love America. Go to blackriflecoffee.com/herd and get 20% off your first coffee club order. And by the way, hot water that never runs out, Navien tankless water filters, and go to tanklessmadesimple.com. Those are great, and you'll save money. All right, Jeff Schwartz, Fox Sports analyst, former NFL offensive lineman. This guy knows offensive line a lot. And so, first of all, you're in studio.
Yes.
You and Joel Klatt, I mean, seriously, this island has only two occupants in the last year and a half. So we usually don't talk offensive linemen. I've said I love football, but I don't sit and study it, so I depend on guys like you. And tonight you're hosting Big Boys Club, O-Line Draft Academy. Tonight, 7, I'm going to watch this, 7 Eastern on FS1. Don't be cruddy, because I'm watching.
I won't be. It is, we went out and did a Gruden-style quarterback camp, but for offensive linemen. So we went to Dallas for 4 days. We filmed 4 of the guys there. We came here to do Panay Sewell in Los Angeles. So it's behind the scenes of training, how to prepare. We watched the film, X and O's, whiteboard. We had a big barbecue dinner one night as well. So it's like Gruden quarterback camp, 1 hour. And then we're going to have digital things like the film and X and O's everywhere.
So it's very interesting. Reportedly, Joe Burrow in Cincinnati is telling the Bengals, draft Ja'Marr Chase.
Yes.
Reportedly, Justin Herbert with the Chargers is telling them, draft Panay Sewell.
Yes.
Let's talk about him. So he is considered, by the experts, the best left tackle. Do you consider him that? Why or why not?
Oh, I definitely do. Here's the thing about Panay. He's a unicorn, okay? Because he's only 20 years old, and he'll be 20 the first month of the season. He won the Outland Trophy starting that year at 18 years old. He played Auburn at AT&T Stadium at 18 years old. And that's what makes him so special. He has so much talent already, and he still is like a kid's body. He's going to grow into a bigger body. He's going to grow into a more physical player, which is already extremely physical. He'll be a better pass protector the older he gets. So that's what you get from him, a talented player who's 20 years old. Most guys we get, Quentin Nelson, right, was a senior. Joe Thomas was an older player. All these guys that we get are typically older. He is 20 years old.
And you said he'll be a better pass protector as he ages, and explain that to the audience, not just because of age, but why?
Well, it's about reps. And in Oregon's offense previous to last year's offense, they didn't really have a lot of drop back pass reps. It wasn't what they did. A lot of screens, a lot of kind of get the ball out quickly. And I think with more opportunity to just practice that and get older. You know, offensive line is a position of practice. You need to rep things out over and over and over again. And he missed last season, right? He sat out last year. So I think with more reps, he'll get more comfortable as a pass protector. He's not bad as a pass protector. He's incredible recovery and balance. It's unbelievable. But just more technique work. That's all he needs at that position.
By the way, he won the Outland Trophy at 18. Holy.
Yeah, the first month of the year. He was 18 years old, then he transitioned to 19. But he played like Derek Brown, Auburn's offensive line, at 18 years old in that opening weekend game in 2019.
Okay, so now there's Rashawn Slater. Yeah. He opted out too.
Yes.
Very good film on Chase Young. Is he better interior or tackle? How do you view him?
He is the most ready pass protector at offensive tackle we have right now. You mentioned the Chase Young game. 2019, he played really well. And this is the thing about, you know, people talk about his arm length is short. Watch the game, guys. Watch the game. He kept Chase Young away from his quarterback with his arms. He was fantastic. Very smooth pass sets, very good independent hands, so one at a time. He's not doing the two-hand punching, not lunging out. But I think he's a tackle all the way. When you watch him in the run game, sometimes his hips and hands don't kind of coordinate with each other. He needs to work on that a little bit. We talk about that on the show. I think he's 100% a tackle, right tackle or left tackle. I would not put him at guard. I don't think he's powerful enough. Panay Sewell's powerful enough to play guard. I don't think Slater is, at least now. Maybe you could work on it. But you draft him right now, you put him at tackle, don't have to worry about him for 12 years.
Okay, now Elijah Vera Tucker at USC. I know the program pretty well. Great kid.
Yes.
Great kid. He was the best guard in the Pac-12. USC has not recruited the O-line particularly well. Yeah. He had to play left tackle and did very well. But you played in the NFL for 8 years. In your eyes, is he a left tackle in the NFL?
Some people believe he is. I think he is an elite guard, and I would put him at guard right away and make sure that he is that elite guard. He can play tackle. The only concern I had with him was against Oregon last year was the only game he played, you know, kind of professional defensive ends. Kayvon Thibodeau, who we'll get into next year, and a couple other guys at Oregon, he had a tougher game. And that was the first time all year he played against a true kind of pro guy. But he's very smooth. But a guard, his recovery is so good, the second level. He's so smooth out there. Like, there's no panic in his sets when people, because, you know, they pass the ball so much at USC that he gets a lot of reps in pass pro.
Yeah.
And they bring a lot of pressure and stuff. So he's practiced a lot of pro things that he will do. I think you put him at guard right now and just be done with it. Put him at guard, whether you're the Vikings at 14, the Giants at 11, or maybe the Chargers, and just put them there and be done with it.
Yeah, Chargers need a left tackle.
Yes.
Is there a tackle, and I don't know if we'll have film of them, Virginia Tech guy I've heard has some red flags. Is there a tackle you're a little weary of? The footwork, injury, there's something that you as a guy that's played, yeah, you're just a little weary of them.
So Tavon Jenkins from Oklahoma State is not a bad player, but he's really just a right tackle. Like, he's kind of too big to play guard and probably not good enough to play left tackle. So it puts him in a weird spot in the draft. I know people have mocked him to certain teams, but guys, I think he's just specifically a right tackle. Again, I don't think he's bad, but I think that's kind of just the one position, which is tough because Slater and Sewell can play two positions. Vera Tucker can get by tackle, but can play guard as well. He's kind of just a one position type of guy. The other guy that is not talked about a lot that could be a lot of value is Walker Little from Stanford.
Oh, thank you. Now I know the story, yeah, on him.
So, you know, he hasn't played the last 2 years.
By the way, he was young.
Yeah.
He went to Stanford. He started at Stanford, true freshman.
Yeah.
David Shaw doesn't like to start.
No.
He's from Houston.
Yeah, five-star kid.
Five-star kid. So remember this name. This kid could end up moving up to the second.
Yeah.
He may be the most underrated O-lineman in the draft.
Well, there's no film on him. He hasn't played in 2 years. He played the first game in 2019, hurt his knee against Northwestern, and then opted out last year with the weird Pac-12 season. So, you know, the potential's there, right? Five-star kid. You mentioned Shaw doesn't play a lot of freshmen. He needed to get stronger, more powerful, which you can't tell until he kind of plays. So I know he's worked on it, but he's a guy that you get in the second or third round that probably would have been a top five pick. I mean, he was mocked heading into 2019 as a top five pick.
A top five pick, period.
Yeah, like you don't really drop down. It's just injury. So that concerns me with him. But I think if you get him later in the second or third round, you might get a starter by halfway through the season or next year.
If you ran the Cincinnati Bengals, so they have a center they like, I believe, yes, out of Alabama. They have a left tackle, Jonah Williams.
Yes.
And those are the two key positions. Nothing against you guards or anything. But you want a guy that calls, yeah, the audible. Center and left tackle, they're pretty good. They went and acquired a right tackle.
Yeah.
You could probably get Penei Sewell.
Yeah.
You could probably go get Slater. Or Joe Burrow says, go get Jamar Chase. If you, as an offensive, yeah, lineman, if you ran the Bengals, knowing Burrow has had an injury already, what would you do?
I just look at the history of the NFL. Last 4 years. Let's do last 4 years. 2017 Eagles, best offensive line in the NFL. 2018 Patriots, dominated with that offensive line in the playoffs. 2019 Chiefs, all-pro right tackle, Pro Bowl left tackle. Bucks last year had three all-pro level players. The rookie came in, Wirfs played great at right tackle right away. I would make sure my position up front is fixed. And I get the Bengals' argument. The argument is take Chase at five, get in a deep tackle class or guard class, get someone at 38. But you're not guaranteed to get that guy at 38 that you want. You know, they want, let's say, Alex Leatherwood from Alabama. You might not be there at 38. Like, I would solidify the offensive line now. You can put Penei at right tackle or left tackle. Riley Reiff, you mentioned him. It's a one-year deal. They signed him for 1 year. They do have a hole at right guard as well. You can't convince me that a wide receiver is the way to go to build your roster up when you have a first-round draft pick like this.
Mac Jones, San Francisco 3. What do you make of it?
I don't get it. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. You know, the argument is this, is that Shanahan has taken, whether him or his dad, have taken players with lesser traits at quarterback and made them above average. So I would think to myself, hey, why don't you take a guy with above average traits, Lance and Fields, and make them even better, right? The guy taking the lower ceiling guy doesn't make sense to me. Why would you take a guy with lower traits like to work your off? I don't get it. And also, we've not seen a guy like Mac Jones succeed in the NFL in the last 5 or 6 years, right? Give me an example of a guy who most people
strictly
agree
has
lower, kind of the lower athletic traits as one in the NFL. Who are we looking at? What's the example? We have plenty of traits, guys. Herbert, right? Allen, Mahomes, Watson, even Kyler and Lamar, like all these traits guys have succeeded in the NFL. The lower trade guy, I haven't seen it. So I don't know why you would trade up for him. Remember, they traded the next two first-round picks. No, it's not just this year. It's the next 2 years. I wouldn't tie myself to Mac Jones. I don't think he's terrible. By the way, I don't think he's terrible. But the third pick overall, when you have Fields and Lance there, does not make sense to me in the way they want to construct their team.
You know, it's interesting. I've talked to enough people that have said, if a guy is, there's about 15 great players in this draft.
Yeah.
Like great players. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, most people have said between like 15 to 18 about first round grades.
And then you get into the second, third, fourth round, and there's some GMs that are like, I don't love guys opting out. Now, you tell me, if you were a first round pick, would you have played or opted out? How do players view that?
I think players view it whatever is the best for them to get paid. You know, and we look at the top guys, I don't think it's hurting Chase or Sewell or Slater. Now, it's hurting Gregory Rousseau from Miami because he had a bad pro day and, you know, was overweight. Like, if you showed up at your pro day, it's going to hurt you. But to me, look at the Pac-12 players. Imagine if you're Penei Sewell, right? Or you're Rashawn Slater from the Big Ten. They tell you in August, your season's canceled. You're like, all right, well, I'm out of here. I'm going to get ready for the combine. And then, you know, 4 weeks later, 8 weeks later, like, oh, come on back. And you're like, I've moved on. I'm gone.
See, I that's how like, I would have thought. Like, I have no problem. I left college early. Why? Because I got a job I thought was as close to the big leagues.
Yeah.
I got a AAA baseball job. It was nothing against college, but it was like, okay, I don't think next year I wouldn't get this job. This is the luck. I got a Las Vegas Stars. You usually end up having to work in, like, Yuba City or
in Salem, I mean? Oregon for like the
right.
Rookie ball team.
So like I told like the opt out thing for me, if I was an elite player, I was like, yeah, I get it.
And I know that the older NFL people do not like it. I know for a fact they don't like it. You know, with Jamar Chase, he could have played a full season, but I get it, man. Like, it hasn't hurt his stock at all. Why would you play if you don't have to? You know, a lot of the players come to the college, guys, I'm sorry to tell you, to make money in the NFL. And the quickest path to do that is to sit out this season and get ready to play next year. Plus, he might have known that they weren't going to be as good and he didn't want to play with a new quarterback. And so he just sat out this year and he's going to be in the top five.
You know, it's funny about this, Jeff. I was just having this conversation with Doug Gottlieb yesterday. We were talking about the transfer portal. And I said, in my life, people that are just rigid, it's in their DNA, they're rigid, they have one way to live. It never works out well. The transfer portal is a great example.
Yeah.
So you can look at it and go, oh, my guys are just leaving. The smart coaches have been, or I'm not a great recruiter, but I do run a good program, and I can get three or four guys and solve my issues.
Yeah.
Like a guy's already played in college at Ole Miss, and I'm at Utah, and I'm like, well, I know he can play college. You have a much lower percentage of a bust risk, a bust rate transfer portal. And I kind of look at opting out as sort of like the transfer portal. You can, if you're rigid, it drives you crazy because we didn't have it yesterday. But I look at the transfer portal and say, God, if I was a program, if I just got a job at Texas Tech football, we don't have good enough players. I could just be pro player and sign seven guys who don't get to play at Texas or Oklahoma. I'm good next year. Like, the world's changing. I look at the, like, for instance, guys don't want to play in bowl games.
Yeah. Okay.
A quarterback I want to play in a bowl game. If I'm a running back at LSU and I've taken a beating for 3 years and we're like 8-4, I mean, how do you view not playing in bowl games?
I think everyone on the team roots for their teammate to get paid. And if the best way to do that is skipping the bowl game, they're all for it. Now, of course, you guys are missing playoff games. They're not missing the Rose Bowl. But if you want to sit the Vegas Bowl out or the Sun Bowl out, like, be my guest. Like, I don't have a problem because, again, I think players look at it as rooting for their friends to get paid. But also, you know, it allows a young player to play in a game that possibly couldn't have played in that game in a big bowl game. So I have no problem with that. The transfer portal is so interesting because the old coaches, they hate it. And they hate it more because they don't want to keep recruiting the players they have. They like the old system where you recruit someone, you bring them in your program, and you're basically done recruiting them. Now you have to recruit your own players on your roster every single day because you know that they might leave if you look at them weird.
it is interesting. So you, let me see. I'm going to see where you got. You got drafted in round 7.
Oh, yeah.
Boy. So were you just on the couch with the parents?
It was a bad day.
Why?
So that was when we had 2 days of the draft, right? Rounds 1 and 2 and then the 5 other rounds. So 2008 draft, 10 tackles were taken in the first two rounds. It was like the most they've ever seen that early in the draft.
And you weren't one of them.
No, I was not. I mean, I knew I wasn't one of them. I knew I was like somewhere between like 11 and 15. So I thought like, okay, great. I'll be drafted much earlier than I thought. I thought 4th to 6th round. So I wake up in the morning out on the West Coast, 6 a.m. And they tell you, don't watch the draft. I didn't watch it the first day. Second day, 6 a.m., front of my couch. 3rd round goes by. 4th round goes by. 5th round goes by. Start getting some calls here and there. It was a long day. The Panthers called me, pick 241. I think it's Brandon Bean called me, not a general manager of the Bills. And by that point, I was over. I actually had a deal to go as a free agent somewhere. I was like ready to be done because that was 11 picks from the end of the draft. Brandon Bean calls me and says, hey, how do you feel about getting drafted? And I said, at this point, I don't even care. And he said, well, welcome to the Panthers. And I was like, yeah, I got drafted. Like we had canceled my party. Like, canceled my draft party. We had moved on. And then the party kind of like restarted up again. But it was at that point, because what happens is the last couple of rounds, all these teams start calling you, not to draft you, but to make you think they're interested in you. So you sign there as a free agent. So like teams like, hey, you know, an O-line coach from X team, hey man, we're thinking about drafting you here. And they don't draft you, but then they can call you afterward and say, hey man, we love you. I try to get you drafted. Come sign with me as a priority free agent after the draft. That's how they do it. So I got a bunch of those calls like, hey, we're going to draft you now. Just like, be ready. It just didn't happen till the very end. Pick 241.
I thought about this. I would tell my family I don't want to party. Because you knew you were going to be either a 5th, 6th, or 7th.
Yeah, I mean, but like it was the first time doing, like, for my brother, we scheduled a party the following day. So we knew, like, if it didn't happen on day two, we would be fine. But like, we scheduled the same day as the draft. We canceled the whole thing. We turned the whole thing off. And then people just kind of showed up anyways. Yeah, it was, I wouldn't recommend sitting there watching it. It's a bad experience. It's not fun to see all these. And I've gone back to Wikipedia and looked at like who's been drafted in front of me. Like, he didn't make it. He didn't make it. He didn't make it. I'm petty like that.
Well, I don't think that's petty. I think that's yeah. No, I mean,
I don't
think you're alone. I've heard receivers say that. Like, I that guy can't catch the ball. I know.
Oh yeah.
Akeem Talib. I mean, he's you know, told me before. There's a guy drafted, and he was a high pick, but he played in a losing program.
Yeah, Kansas. Yeah.
Yeah. No. No. Yeah. It's like I guarded that guy and shut him down. You guarded him, gave him 8 catches.
Oh yeah.
That's not petty. That's competent. I like your competitiveness.
Oh yeah. After this, I'm gonna go back and look it up again just to see.
You feel good about yourself.
Oh, I do. Yeah,
you don't want to go on TV tonight not feeling good about yourself.
Exactly, yes.
Jeff Schwartz, great stuff.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Joey Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is The Herd Line News.
If you get involved in that, it will affect how you are, how you think, and what you do. What I can promise people, that you have two people who make sure we don't get involved in that, because that is so irresponsible to let something like that affect your decision. We do this for a living, and I think people should be proud of us that we won't let that affect our decision.
All right.
And then it's up to us to live with the consequences.
And why does stuff keep leaking from them? Like 8 different Mac Jones stories leaking. Nothing leaked for years with San Francisco. Now it's all leaking.
I get what he's saying. We talk about this all the time. You don't take criticism from someone you wouldn't take advice from.
Right.
Right. So social media is not a great place to gauge how well you're doing at your job, you know, what kind of decisions you've made, because this is just, it's a bunch of people who really don't know anything about what you do and just have an opinion for the most part. However, you do have to keep some sort of pulse on the energy towards what you're doing.
That's
right?
True. That's fair.
So I don't think that you should put stock in what, you know, Niners fan 942 says on the message board, but be aware of the viewpoint or the energy that your fan base has towards what you're doing and the direction that you're going. So I don't think that should sway your decision. If you think Mac Jones is a better choice for your team, Kyle Shanahan knows more about football than you and I have ever, like, can even touch, right? Like, this, he obviously knows more about football than all of the fans and you and I and most other analysts as well.
But
like,
by the way,
head coach.
But I do think listening to a lot of voices, you can get little, like, for instance, Panay Sewell was an Outland Trophy winner at 18. You're like, good hell.
Well, yeah, but I'm sure he knows that.
Yeah, but I do think you hear things. I texted two GMs about a player, a positive thing about a player, I said, hey, just to let you know, bang, bang. And both were like, thank you very much. In my
but
year,
you're not social media.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I was going to say, I have occasionally texted a GM and say, and I'll give an example. I'm not patting myself in the back. I've had multiple GMs say, hey, you follow USC. Give me the rundown on their players. And I've told them, kid doesn't work hard. This kid gets hurt a lot. This kid is great kid, limited. I mean, I'll tell them anything. But the USC kids, I'll tell them good, bad. It's mostly, I'll give you an example. Now, I know I didn't change their thinking. But years ago, a general manager asked me about the linebacker for the Chargers, the USC kid, Nuoso. Chenna, he's a terrific player. And I had some good insight in the facility, and I said, I would draft that kid. Like, this kid in the program, got out of the program, came back, fought for a job, and I knew, I'm not going to say a couple things I knew about him, and I'm like, total fighter, street fighter, you want him in your locker room. And I told two GMs that, and one of them picked him. Now, I don't think I persuaded them.
No, but it does, when you're getting input on things, it does matter. But again, I would say you're not social media. You have sources in the building. You follow the program. You're close to the program. Like, you watch every game. Like, you're invested in that, and you have voices and sources. The average person that's just a USC fan watching it from their house, having a beer, and then having an opinion on things, that's just an opinion. It's not based in anything except for your fandom and what you see.
But it is. Do sometimes the fans say things? Because we all know there's some smart fans. I mean, there's a lot of Division I athletes who play, don't play.
I'm not saying fans don't know the game or don't understand it. No, I'm just saying that there is, when you're talking about scouting players, when you're talking about knowing how they are in the building, what their relationships are with their family, like, that's what a scout is supposed to do.
I guess I'm this. I am not a believer that you never listen to anybody's opinion. Like, I occasionally, not a lot, because I put filters on my phone for the meatballs, but there are times that I have, I'll give an example. When I get in a cab or an Uber, I ask very generic questions. What do you care about? What did you watch last night? I want to hear from an average guy, what did you watch? What do you care? And I'll often take that into my show thinking, the average guy, I remember this, getting into Ubers, and everybody hated Durant to the Warriors. They were like, I'll never watch the NBA. It's rigged. And I remember, I didn't think that at all, but I remember thinking, man, and it was like two or three people were like, young, old, like, I hate Durant to the Warriors. The league is, and I remember thinking, man, I think it is mobility, upward mobility. Fans hated it, and the ratings went down.
No, I agree. I think that most 49ers fans are not happy with the idea of Mac Jones, because the 49ers fans that I know are not happy with Mac Jones. Like, and I know they talk to other 49ers fans, and they've told me that the other 49ers fans that they are friends with aren't either. Now, that doesn't mean the whole fan base isn't, but that's why it's important to pay attention to it. I'm just saying, he is saying he's not going to change his pick because the message boards are unhappy with Mac Jones, which is probably the right thing to do. So the Packers directed a lot of their resources in the last year to keeping their own guys. Defensive tackle Kenny Clark, left tackle David Bakhtiari, both got extensions in 2020, and Aaron Jones re-signs before hitting the open market. And their GM said keeping their own players in Green Bay was one of the team's top priorities.
We were able to kind of sign the number one running back on the market, the number one left tackle on the market, and the number one defensive tackle on the market. So we just happened to all play for us, which is great. We certainly did a lot, maybe a little bit outside of what we normally do as far as pushing money forward to kind of continue to keep this team together so we can make another run.
Yeah, by the way, that's what Tampa's doing. It's okay. Win games now. You're not going to get another Aaron.
I don't get it. I didn't understand it from the moment that Jordan Love was taken. I did not understand what Green Bay was doing. So doing something a little outside of what you normally do in Green Bay, I think, is the right thing to do. You're in the NFC Championship game. You have Aaron Rodgers. What are you blowing up? What are you preparing for the future for? This is not Pittsburgh, okay? You do not have Ben Roethlisberger coming off of an injury and this having a disaster in the playoffs. Like, you are set to win right now. Go all in. Like, just stop betting the minimum.
You got Aaron after Favre. You're not going to get another Favre after Aaron.
Exactly.
Okay, this is it.
And that's what you're counting on.
So go
insanity.
Tampa is never going to get a GOAT at 43 to move to their franchise. So just go all in and win.
It's the right thing to do.
All right. We got one more story. We'll do it after the break. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Baker Mayfield's talking. We'll talk about that coming up next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm John Middlecoff, and I host the 3 and Out podcast. Do you like football? Do you like the NFL? Do you like the NFL draft? Quarterbacks, coaches? Well, I talk about it all on the show. I used to work for Andy Reid as a scout. Now I give you my unfiltered and raw opinions on everything that goes on in the NFL. And you know we're talking college football because of how important the draft is year-round. Listen to the 3 and Out podcast with me, John Middlecoff, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
TanklessMadeSimple.com, TanklessMadeSimple.com. Navien Tankless Water Filter. Save you money, save you space, save the planet. Check them out. Local rebates will save you hundreds. Baker Mayfield talking yesterday. He doubled down on not only UFOs, but something else. Here you go.
I'm a firm believer in UFOs and Sasquatch. It's real. I saw it. I'm glad the Navy finally confirmed some more pictures. Now everybody doesn't think I'm as crazy. I believe.
Now, UFOs, we have governments now, including ours, that are acknowledging we don't know what this is and we're investigating. So for the day, I'm going to give Baker a pass. But the Sasquatch, come on. The two greatest Sasquatch sightings, one was in the Himalayas in the early 90s, and the people admitted it was a total hoax. Mm-hmm. Then there's this picture that happened in the 60s, 70s in Northern California. That is largely considered a hoax because somebody in the family had a Hollywood tie, and they had a suit. And so there's a daughter of somebody who said, yeah, Dad had a suit, and this is the kind of thing Dad would have done. And Dad lived up in Northern California, used to work in Hollywood. So that's considered a hoax. And the Himalayans issue, that was a hoax. That's a confirmed. So I grew up in the Pacific Northwest.
I'm not into the Sasquatch thing. I don't believe it.
So I grew up in the Pacific Northwest. The wake and bake crowd was very much into that. So basically what the Sasquatch is, it's a great marketing story. It really is. There's never been a sighting that's legitimate.
It's not that hard to find anything on Earth. Like,
you'd find it.
Satellites. Nobody goes off the grid anymore. So everyone's freaking out about microchips. You can't go off the grid. It's over. You're always going to be on the grid. So like, you can't find a Sasquatch. Of course you can find a Sasquatch.
If you wanted to find one. Now, UFOs, there are enough sightings, and governments now are saying, we're not sure what it is. Now, what do I believe? I believe it's other governments that are ahead of us on some stuff, and we're seeing pictures of it.
There's definitely 1,000% aliens. We are not the only intelligent life in the entire universe. That's such a human thing to say.
I know. Well, I'm very human. I think that's it. And I think when they get down here, they're not going to be as smart as everybody thinks.
I think they're going to get here, take a look around, and be like, let's get out of here.
How come if they're so smart, they always crash when they get down here?
Well,
they fly through space, then run into a tree in New Mexico. I don't think they're that smart. Sound like a bad driver.
I, for one, Joy Taylor, am cool with the alien community. That's Colin Cowherd talking. So when you come to take over, I am the queen.
I've got my questions.
Do me no harm.
Prove it to me.
I've been a supporter for a long time.
I haven't.
This goes double for the robots who are definitely coming for us soon.
Unfortunately, we're creating those.
Yeah.
All right. We're done for today. That's enough. The Sasquatch. It's the Herd.